This is 1988 Tops, where every card has a story to tell. Your hosts are David McKellis and Matt Kuzma. Let's play ball. Welcome back to 1988 Tops. David, what's our card for this week?
Our card this week is card number 215, Von Hayes, first base slash outfield for the Philadelphia Phillies.
Why are we talking about Von today?
According to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, nobody knows who Von Hayes is, but we know who Von Hayes is. He's come up on multiple podcasts. Our Phillies friends know who Von Hayes is. We just mentioned him last week, and listener Steven requested Von Hayes a few weeks back. Von went to Ed Sprague's high school, and he is old 5-for-1, once traded for Jay Baller, Julio Franco, and some other guys. This should serve as an apology to Phillies fanatics, Phillies nation. I cursed your team by deciding that I was going to cheer for them because they were the only team left in the playoffs that I owned a hat for. And then they lost in 7 games in the NLCS. So hopefully this Von Hayes episode makes up for it. Von has a Saber bio by Zach Petrillo, and we will be relying heavily on that. But Von Hayes is a pretty cool player, often in the shadow of some other Phillies greats, but had a solid career and is an underrated player.
Sounds good. Well, we will pay our penance by going to the front of card 215, and we have Von Hayes. David, this reminds me of the Danny Tartable card, where we have some geometric problems with this card. Von Hayes is a left-handed hitter. He's obviously taken a swing. His bat is on the ground behind him, but yet he's looking back well behind himself as if to maybe follow a foul ball that is all the way. This doesn't seem like any reason for him to be looking back that direction.
Especially with that expression on his face. That expression is to see where the ball is going. But if the ball is foul, which it must be, looking at the direction that he's facing, you can see fully into the opposing Expos dugout back there. It looks like he's looking straight into his own dugout. I have no idea what he's so surprised about.
And even if he were to foul a ball off, as a left-handed hitter, if he was to foul one off back and to the right-hand side, it's not going to be going fast enough to injure somebody. Unlikely to have, you know, been fouled off so hard that he's going to need to then turn and look to see where it went. And because he's still in stride, it's not like this is after the ball has already landed. He's obviously looking to see where the ball went, and I just don't understand how this could happen in the space-time continuum.
Unless it's a high-pop foul, and he's just making sure that somebody isn't going to catch it, but he looks like he's getting ready to run.
That doesn't make sense. Yeah,
it doesn't really make sense. The people in the dugout back there look bored.
Yeah, I would think, is the word nonplussed, is that, I don't know the French pronunciation of the these very, very uninterested and unconcerned Canadians in the dugout, one of whom on the right looks like he may be eating le sandwich.
Or smoking. We have those beautiful Expos uniforms in the background, but Von is wearing the powder blues, which I really thought were going to carry the Phillies into the World Series this year. Aside from the weird look on his face, the jersey looks great.
Yeah, really does. The red stripe that goes all the way along the top of the shirt and all the way down the side of the shirt and of the pants looks just awesome. Just screams 80s baseball. That Expos look in the dugout too, a real mainstay of this podcast series. So great looking card, good action shot, although we have no idea how physically this play could be happening. Let's go to the back of 215. And we have Von Hayes, first baseman outfielder, 6'5", 180, left-handed batter and right-handed thrower. Drafted by Cleveland in the 7th round of 1979. Born August 31st, 1958 in Stockton, California, with a home in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania.
Von grew up in Stockton, California, which is on the San Joaquin River, and it is the largest city in San Joaquin County, the 11th largest city in California, located east of the Bay Area. Stockton was founded in 1849. In 1851, the University of the Pacific was chartered. in San Jose, and this is the oldest university in California, but it has been located in Stockton since 1923. This is the place where Ed Sprague would coach for a decade in the 2010s. The city has grown from 70,000 in 1950 to 320,000 in 2020. Stockton is infamous as one of the largest municipal bankruptcies in United States history. In 2012, the city filed for bankruptcy and exited bankruptcy in 2015. Due to that situation, Stockton was on some less than desirable national rankings. In 2012, it was named the 8th most miserable city in the United States and the 10th most dangerous city in America. Things have gotten slightly better in the 8 years since they exited bankruptcy. It's also the location for a lot of movies that have been filmed there, including Cool Hand Luke, Hot Shots Part Deux, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and Flubber, all equal quality films. The band Pavement was formed in Stockton in 1989. Their first album, Slanted and Enchanted, was recorded in two separate sessions, one in Brooklyn and then one at Louder Than You Think Studios in Stockton. Von's mother, Leonor Rosario, was born in Puerto Rico. She grew up one of 13 kids without electricity and was determined to get an education and get out of Puerto Rico. She went to college and left the island, settling in Stockton, where she became a nurse and served at San Joaquin General Hospital for 30 years. She married Donald Hayes and had 5 kids, 3 girls, Maureen, Donna, and Naomi, and 2 sons, Mike and then Von. Matt, do you know anybody named Vaughn?
I don't know anyone with the first name Vaughn. The only Vaughns I can think of are Jean-Claude Van Damme, maybe Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, Vince, Andrew, also Vaughn Grissom, who played it for the Braves this year. The California, Nevada grocery store chain Vaughns. I don't know if it's short for something, like Martha and the Vondellas, Vonda Shepherd, Vonathan.
Vonathan, yeah, I like that.
His full name is Von Francis Hayes, and there is a story to the name. Von's dad was Donald, so it's also not short for Vonald. Donald was a tail gunner on a B-17 in World War II, and his plane was shot down. He was a POW for 11 months, and one of his fellow POWs was named Von, and that is who Von is named after, one of his dad's fellow POWs in World War II.
So growing up, Von's brother Mike was a talented athlete, and Von followed along to his baseball and basketball games. Mike played football at St. Mary's High, which we discussed in the Ed Sprague episode, although we didn't mention Mike as a featured alumni, but he was a star athlete. He played on the undefeated 1971 St. Mary's football team. This team was inducted into the Stockton Athletic Hall of Fame. As a kid, Vaughn was much smaller than Mike and wasn't an obvious future professional, but his dad pushed him, and because he was smaller, he had to work hard to compete with his brother and larger classmates. Father Don was from Massachusetts and taught Vaughn to bat left-handed and modeled his swing off of Ted Williams. Things changed a little bit for Vaughn going into his junior year at St. Mary's High School because he was 5'7 at the beginning of the year and grew to 6'1 by graduation of high school, which changed quite a bit for him as a potential prospect.
He was a pitcher, and in his words, he was a bad one. And he had to work hard to get noticed at all because he wasn't a physical specimen at this point. But he went to St. Mary's College, home of the Gales, where he was a teammate of another pitcher in the set, Tom Candiotti, the Candyman. And St. Mary's has a very good baseball history, nearly 70 Major League Baseball players, along with Von Hayes and Tom Candiotti. Current pitchers Tony Gonsolin and Corbin Burns were Gales, along with All-Stars Gus Triandos and Frank Demery, who was an All-Star for the Cubs in the 1930s. Hall of Famer Harry Hooper and Hall of Fame umpire Hank O'Day also played baseball at St. Mary's. While at the school, Hayes kept growing to 6'5". At this point, they moved him off the mound and over to first base and third base, where he split time, and he turned into a real professional prospect. He had 11 triples in 1978 and still holds the school record with 17 for his college career, which is actually tied with Tony Gonsolin, who was a very good college hitter but went on to a professional pitching career. Hayes also had a school record 609 slugging percentage, which remains the school record.
During the summer of 1978, he went to play in a collegiate league in Clarinda, Iowa, and was actually cut from the team. But after a great 1979 season at St. Mary's, Cleveland drafted him in the seventh round. Before signing, he went back to Clarinda, to the team that had cut him, and he was so good that he was invited to play in a USA Collegiate All-Star team that played in Japan. Came back from Japan and led Clarinda to the National Baseball Congress World Series in Wichita and hit 7 home runs in 7 games. So that's a nice comeback story for Vaughn early in his career. Cleveland's farm director Bob Quinn watched him go 9-for-10 in 3 games of this series and knew that they just had to sign him.
Because Vaughn had waited to sign, he was able to raise his value a little bit. But by the time that he did sign, after that brief holdout, it was too late to play in the minors, so he would have to wait until 1980. Part of his signing deal was that he would get to go to big league camp to be able to prove himself in 1980. And this wasn't normal for a seventh round pick, but he said that the club made an exception because, quote, my dad was a good agent. I guess trust a former World War II POW to do your negotiating for you. He's seen worse.
So while Vaughn did get the chance to go to camp and got some playing time during that camp due to some injuries up the ladder, he did not make the team coming out of spring training and started at single A level Waterloo. And that's where he earned a fun fact that Vaughn was named Midwest League MVP in 1980. He hit .329 with 15 homers, 33 doubles, and 51 stolen bases, won the batting title, and Waterloo won the league title. This is a very good rookie year. Mostly he's playing third base at this point.
After that season, he was at Florida Instructional League, and one night he was walking home, and he was attacked. Two attackers attempted to rob him, leaving him with a fractured jaw, and the police said they thought he was hit with an iron pipe in the jaw. Hayes said, I had to have a root canal to save my teeth. Maybe I was pretty dressed up and they thought I had money. When he recovered, he went to Puerto Rico, continued playing in the offseason, and he was coached by Orlando Cepeda and Cookie Rojas.
In 1981, he got another call to spring training, and this time earned a spot on Cleveland's roster. So in his second year, that's great. That's a big jump from single A to the majors. He played in one game in April as a defensive replacement, and then was sent to AAA. He had really only been up while Toby Hara had recovered from an injury, sustained falling off a ladder in the offseason. But when Toby came back, Vaughn was sent down to AAA and was okay with the demotion. He said, naturally, there's a letdown, but I'm content. I want to play, and I'm not playing here anyway.
And this ended up for the best because the big leagues went on strike. So Vaughn was playing well at Charleston, hitting .314 with 10 home runs, 6 triples, 34 steals. And shortly after the strike ended in July, he was called back up for the rest of the season. He plays in 43 games, 28 starts, a little bit in the outfield, some DH, a few games at third base. He hit .257 with 1 home run, and he had a good eye, so his OPS plus was .115. And now that he was up, the question was where to use him. In 1982, he started as a bench player, but after a month, he's a regular starter. He had starts at every outfield position and first and third base in his official rookie season. This would last throughout his career. Vaughn would play regularly at all the positions in the outfield as well as first base. His offense this year was okay. He had 14 home runs with a .250 average, 25 doubles, 82 RBIs, and 32 stolen bases. He was also caught 13 times, but they were just sending everybody to run at this point. His on-base percentage was only .310, so he would need to work on taking some walks, which he would later in his career. Still, this was good enough for 7th in the Rookie of the Year balloting on a very stacked ballot that had Cal Ripken Jr., Kent Herbeck, Wade Boggs, Gary Gaetti, and Jesse Barfield.
Finishing up the year, Cleveland was 78-84, tied for last in the American League East. That's really not a very bad record for tied for last. That was a powerful division. And Cleveland's got a valuable young player on their hands. They've finished last in the division. They need to make a move. And during the winter meetings, they decided to basically try to flip Vaughn for an entire whole new team. And that takes us to the this way to the clubhouse, that Vaughn was traded by the Indians to the Phillies in exchange for Julio Franco, Manny Trio, George Vukovich, Jay Baller, and Jerry Willard, December 9th, 1982.
At the time, Cleveland fans were polled, and even though This was five players for one. 87% of the fans from one radio station viewed this deal unfavorably. They thought Von Hayes was going to be a superstar. They didn't know what these five guys, aside from making delicious burgers, what these five guys were going to bring to Cleveland. And how did it go for Cleveland with the guys they got back? It's impressive that all five of them played in the big leagues. As we talked about with the Tim Burtzis episode, sometimes those returns with a bunch of players, you don't get five guys who are all big leaguers. In this one, you have Jay Baller, or Jay Baller, never played in Cleveland, was traded 2 years later, ended up making the big leagues later with the Cubs and the Phillies back in Philadelphia. George Vukovich played three seasons for Cleveland. He went to Southern Illinois Carbondale, go Salukis. He had one very good year in 1984, sandwiched between two bad years, and then he went to Japan. Jerry Willard was a fine backup catcher for a couple years. Manny Trio, I think, was one that upset Phillies fans because he had been on the 1980 championship team. He had been an All-Star, Gold Glove winner, and he only had 1 year left on his contract, so the Phillies wanted to get rid of him. They knew he was getting up in age. They might not be able to sign him. He ended up traded again in mid-1983, so he didn't even do anything for Cleveland. Julio Franco is really the one that worked out from this trade. His best years came in Texas, but in Cleveland, he had six decent seasons, including a second-place Rookie of the Year finish in 1983, three 300 seasons, and his first Silver Slugger in 1988. Looking back, as Phillies fans would see Julio Franco start to turn out a decent player, they would be a little bit thinking, what if? But for Vaughn in Philadelphia, he showed up in training camp, and Pete Rose, the kind guy that he is, started calling him 5-for-1, a name that stuck.
Yeah, Vaughn tried to tell himself not to try to prove he could play as well as all five of those guys combined. But there was definitely pressure, given how much the Phillies had given up to sign him. He was also on a team that was a couple years removed from their first ever World Series title, so there was some ego on the team to compete with. The 83 Phillies were known as the Wheeze Kids, a team that's up in age with Tony Perez, Joe Morgan, Mike Schmidt, Pete Rose, and Steve Carlton. This team proceeded to win 90 games and take the National League East title, so Vaughn gets to go from worst to first. Morgan, Carlton, Schmidt were all very good, but Pete Rose was pretty bad. Perez was okay.
And so Hayes going from that bad Cleveland team to this high-pressure situation where he's under significant scrutiny because of a big trade. He only played in the outfield this season, starting 86 games. He made a few pinch-hit, pinch-runner appearances. Through May, he's hitting 172 with no home runs and three RBIs. He was much better starting in June. He hit 327 for the month, and over the rest of the year, he hit a respectable 283. On the year, he had six home runs, 20 steals, with 12 caught stealing, five triples, a 97 OPS plus. Meanwhile, Julio Franco was better in almost every statistical category that year. Just in that one-to-one comparison, fans would probably be disappointed, but they couldn't be too disappointed because the Phillies made the playoffs. Vaughn only had two at-bats in the NLCS, going 0-for-2 against the Dodgers. In the World Series, he had three pinch-hit appearances and went 0-for-3 as the Phillies lost to the Orioles. And sadly, this would be his only playoff experience. He went overall 0-for-5 in the playoffs.
The rest of Vaughn's time with the Phillies, while he would have seven good seasons, the team would never finish closer than 15 games back. In 1984, Vaughn started to show the quality that was expected, hitting .292 with 16 home runs and 48 stolen bases. That was a 4-WAR season for a team that went .500. And by this time, Mike Schmidt is still doing well, but he's 34. Steve Carlton is around for now. And Phillies fans were looking for the next young star to follow, and Vaughn Hayes was delivering. And maybe that 5-for-1 was going to pay off.
Unfortunately, 1985 was a step back for Hayes. On the year, he hit just .263 with 13 home runs and 21 steals, all totals significantly lower than 1984. But he had a special moment on June 11th against the Mets. At this point, the Phillies are 21-34, while the Mets are 31-23. Two teams headed in different directions. Vaughn is the leadoff man in this game. In the bottom of the first, he leads off with a home run against Tom Gorman. Eight more batters come up. Three more runs, a pitching change later. Vaughn comes to the plate against Calvin Schiraldi with the bases loaded.
is this going to wind up? Now, right on out of here, a grand slam home run, his second homer of the inning. 8-0 Phillies.
Vaughn's trying not to smile across the home plate, but boy, does he happy. Now he's letting it go.
How about that for a start, huh?
Vaughn hits a grand slam, and this is the first time in history that a player hit two home runs in the first inning of a game. The Phillies won this game 26-7. In an odd twist, only two home runs hit in this game, both by Vaughn Hayes. So they scored 26 runs. Only five of those runs came from home runs. The Phillies on the year finished 75-87.
1986 didn't start great for the Phillies. By June, they were already 10 games back and three games under 500. The Mets were in first in April and won 108 games to finish the season. But Vaughn was great in 1986 and was particularly good against the rival Mets, hitting .357 with an OPS over one, with four home runs and 16 RBIs. In September, the Mets were running away with the division and the Phillies had pulled into second, although it was 20 games back. They faced the Mets in a series where the Mets could clinch the division. Instead, the Phillies swept all three games. Vaughn went 4-for-4 in the first game, 2-for-4 with a homer in the second, and 2-for-4 in the last game. It was just delaying the inevitable, but it was a big series to spoil the weekend for young Mets fans everywhere.
On the year, Vaughn hit .305 with 19 home runs and 24 stolen bases. He led the league with 46 doubles and 107 runs. And this was his most complete season to date. He was playing mostly at first base and was playing good defense as well. I remember seeing this line on the back of a card and thinking, this guy's a star. I had no concept of age or regression with age. I just saw that he had black ink on the card, almost 20 home runs and 24 stolen bases. Vaughn Hayes must be set for superstardom. The Phillies finished with a respectable 86 wins, good for second place, but again, pretty far back from the champion Mets. Vaughn put together a 5 wins above replacement season, all-star caliber season, and he said, that would have been my year to get recognition. The problem was, I had a teammate, Mike Schmidt, who was the National League MVP. So Vaughn had his star year, but was still rightfully overshadowed by the legendary Mike Schmidt.
He won 3 National League Player of the Week awards in 1986, one in May, one in August, and one in September, and finished 8th in the MVP ballot. If the voting had been up to Glenn Wilson, it would have been all Vaughn. Glenn Bow was a fan. He said, I wouldn't be surprised to see Vaughn Hayes win a Triple Crown. That's the kind of ability and determination he has. After the season, the Phillies signed him to a new 3-year contract worth $3.9 million. Phillies president Bill Giles said, hopefully Vaughn will be around for another 10 years. That didn't happen. And the next 6 years, the Phillies would not finish above 500.
In 1987, despite solid seasons from Mike Schmidt, Milt Thompson, Juan Samuel, Shane Raleigh, and Vaughn, and a Cy Young performance from Bedrock Bedrosian, the Phillies started the season 29-32, fired their manager, and finished 80-82 under Lee Elia. One season review said the team, quote, seemed lifeless, like they've been invaded by body snatchers. Vaughn was good, but he was just a step away from superstardom. He didn't quite hit that next gear. With the rabbit ball year in 1987, this should have been a breakout power season. Vaughn hit 21 home runs to go along with 5 triples and 36 doubles. When everybody else is hitting 35-plus homers, it just doesn't look quite right. He did hit .277 and had a career-high 121 walks, which gave him a .404 on-base percentage. 12 of those walks were intentional, so pitchers knew that they could pitch around him, depending on who was hitting behind him. If he's hitting right in front of Mike Schmidt, he's going to get some pitches to hit, but if he's anywhere else in the lineup, they just pitched around him.
So these stats in 1987 represent a pretty good year for him, but compared to the rest of the league, it was just fine. He probably would have been a legitimate all-star pick, as he was hitting .308 with 13 homers and a .998 OPS at the break. But there were a lot of great offensive outfielders this year, and the Phillies already had Schmidt, Juan Samuel, and Bedrosian on the all-star team, so just wasn't in the cards for him that year. 1988 was a down year for both Vaughn and the Phillies, who would lose 96 games. Vaughn was out most of July and all of August with an elbow injury. He also got into a shouting match with manager Lee Elia in June after Vaughn tossed his helmet in frustration and the helmet hit the manager. Oops.
Yeah, he needs better aim.
Mike Schmidt also missed significant time this year. Steve Jeltz hit only 187. Phil Bradley was the best offensive player. This is just a tough year.
Vaughn hit 6 home runs in 104 games. 1989, he was back and actually would have a season as good as his 1986 season. He came quick out of the gate, hitting .382 with 7 home runs, 7 doubles, and 22 RBIs in April. His OPS was 1.281, and he won the National League Player of the Month for April. Then on May 28th, Mike Schmidt retired after a slow start. And so without Schmidt in the lineup, there wasn't much protection for Vaughn, and he was left as the only power threat. Vaughn had a good year on a bad team, and he was part of one of the most memorable games in the 1989 Phillies season.
Yeah, it's a game we've talked about a couple times. In June of 1989, we have what we have called the Steve Jeltz game. But Vaughn was also partially responsible for the comeback against the Pirates that made Jim Rooker walk across the entire state of Pennsylvania. As we've discussed, the Pirates took a 10-0 lead in the first inning. Jim Rooker says on the air, "If we don't win this one, I don't think I want to be on that plane ride home. Matter of fact, if we don't win, I'll walk back to Pittsburgh." And in the bottom of the first, Vaughn Hayes hit a 2-run homer, driving in Randy Reddy, making it 10-2.
In the third, Vaughn hits his second home run, driving in Steve Jeltz to make it 10-4. Jeltz would then do his thing, hitting 2 home runs. The Phillies would win 15-11, and Rooker would do his thing and walk across the state for charity. The Phillies would lose 95 games on the season, but that is a highlight.
Shortly after that, Vaughn signed a 3-year extension. General manager Lee Thomas said Hayes was the number one guy in this most demanding of sports towns and said Hayes was going to get better and better.
And Matt, maybe Vaughn used his newfound wealth on this collection of Santas.
This is a very charming photo that we will have in the show notes of a lovely looking Vaughn Hayes in a Christmas scene surrounded by 40 Santas.
Nightmare Santas.
All kinds of Santas. There's really nothing that nightmarish. There's some of them are dolls. Some of them are big stuffed Santas. Others are curios or ornaments. I think a nice collection.
This is from 2013. The Phillies posted this old photo from the 80s of Vaughn. And it says, if you weren't aware, Vaughn Hayes was and could possibly still be a Santa collector. Somebody in the comments said that picture was not taken in Vaughn's house. They belong to a former Phillies exec. So I'm not entirely sure if these are Vaughn's Santas. He looks sort of comfortable with the Santas. As comfortable as one could be surrounded by nightmare Santas.
Do you think he borrowed these Santas? You don't think that these are his Santas?
I don't know. It might be somebody else's house. Maybe he was kidnapped by those Santas.
You know, I think that a good idea for a business would be Santas as a service. Some kind of on-demand Santa delivery service. Vaughn could have used it for this.
Yeah, and then they take away
photo.
Your Santas after the festive season.
Yeah. Send it to the next household that requires Santas on demand.
I feel like that's a very limited time that you're going to need Santas on demand. And everyone is going to need Santas on demand at the same time.
Those are scaling issues that we'll deal with in the next iteration, David. After that contract extension, Vaughn was finally named to his first All-Star game. Despite a solid career to this point, he finally gets the nod. He had one at bat in the 1989 All-Star game, got an RBI single with 2 outs in the 8th inning. And the GM was right about Vaughn for that season. Vaughn Hayes was at his best. He had a career-high 26 homers, 28 steals, 101 walks, and 78 RBIs. And although his average was down to 259, those 101 walks made a huge difference. His OPS plus was a career high 140. But sadly, that would be the last full season of Vaughn's career.
In 1990, he was limited to 129 games due to various injuries, including, we've already talked about a guy falling off a ladder earlier. I think Ernie Riles cut his hand with a broken glass in his kitchen. This one is another odd one. He had an exercise bike accident and the chain on the exercise bike cut his hand, requiring 12 stitches. And so Vaughn misses significant playing time. The Phillies are starting to develop the team that would make the 1993 World Series. At this point, you have Lenny Dykstra, John Kruk, Darren Dalton, all establishing themselves. The Phillies won 77 games, which is an improvement over the 60s that they were in the previous couple of years. Hayes was good when he played, hitting .261 with 17 home runs. He added 87 walks for a .118 OPS plus, but it was just keeping him on the field that was a problem.
In 1991, the Phillies were again a little under .500. They fired Nick Leyva and hired Jim Fregosi, another move that brought them closer to that 1993 National League title. Unfortunately, this was the end of the line for Vaughn Hayes. In June, he was hit by a Tom Browning fastball, and it broke the ulna bone in his right wrist. He tried to come back in September, but for the year, he only played 77 games, hitting only .225 with no home runs. He was the first player in Major League history to finish a season with zero home runs after finishing with 17 or more the season before. And that December, the Phillies traded Vaughn to California for Kyle Abbott and Ruben Amaro Jr., the Angels thinking that Vaughn had a few good years left.
Abbott was a top pitching prospect. He was a 1989 first-round pick who never quite panned out. With the Phillies in 1992, he went 1-14 with a 5.13 ERA. Ruben Amaro Jr. grew up around the Phillies. His dad was a major league infielder and the Phillies' first base coach. So he grew up a bat boy with the Phillies and was a classmate of Adam Goldberg, who was the creator of the TV show The Goldbergs. So Ruben Amaro Jr. is a character on that show. In real life, he played in 8 major league seasons, 5 for the Phillies, later served as assistant GM for the Phillies, and then took over as GM in 2009, serving in that role to a low degree of success, let's say, through 2015. Vaughn played in 94 games for the Angels in 1992, hitting .225 with 4 home runs, and the Angels released him in August of that year.
Vaughn didn't retire right away. He tried to find a spot on a playoff roster somewhere, but there were no takers. And he said, "I broke my arm when I was hit by a pitch from Tom Browning, and I was finished. I tried to make a comeback in 1992, but it was no good." So, closing the book on Vaughn Hayes, 12 seasons in the major leagues, 9 of them for Philadelphia, 2 for Cleveland, and 1 for California, with a total of 1,495 games played. He had a .267 batting average and an on-base percentage of .354, which was an OPS plus of .113. 1,402 hits, 143 home runs, 253 steals, 1 All-Star appearance in 1989. What about in retirement?
He had a coaching career in the minors, managing in the A's organization, then later in the Independent League for the Lancaster Barnstormers and the Camden River Sharks. He also managed in Mexico with the Puebla Pericos. And according to LinkedIn, he also worked for an HR company. I found another reference that said that he once sold boats. He also owned a boat that was named Two in the First after that famous historic moment for him against the Mets. He has a wife, Stephanie, and 2 kids. And they raised their kids in Lake Forest, Illinois, just north of Chicago. And Vaughn is now a grandpa. He also has owned property in a few places, Florida, Clarinda, Iowa, where he played in the Collegiate League, and he has property there for hunting and fishing. And in a 2002 article, he's also taken up truck driving. He said that when he was a kid, his dad sold advertising in a trucking magazine, and he was always fascinated by semi-trucks. So he got a license and got a big rig, and Vaughn and his dog Max, a black lab, can be found driving on the highways across the United States in their 53-foot tractor trailer. "Max and I love it," he said. "We sleep, eat, and watch TV all in the cab of the truck. If we see a lake or a stream that looks inviting, I'll buy a license quickly online and throw a line in the water."
Age 65 is just the perfect time to pick up truck driving, I guess. Makes a lot of sense to me. Well, David, here is a player who started with such high hopes and was involved in such an important trade and had such high expectations. Now, after looking at his career, what do we think?
It wasn't easy for Vaughn with those huge expectations, and he put pressure on himself, traded for 5 players, including a future All-Star in Julio Franco and a fan favorite in Manny Trio, Vaughn was not the most emotive or passionate-looking player on the field, and when times got tough, the notably very chill Phillies fans sometimes took it out on him, and there were boos. And Vaughn didn't gain any friends by telling reporters, "They can do whatever they want. I'll be eating steak every night." But Vaughn was really good for a few seasons. From 1984 to 1990, he was the 26th most valuable position player in Major League Baseball by wins above replacement. In that tier, he's right around Robin Yount, Tim Wallach, Dale Murphy, Eric Davis, ahead of Paul Molitor, Dwight Evans, Mike Schmidt, and Will Clark over that stretch. But he's one of the lower profile players in that tier. He only made one All-Star game, only in the top 10 in MVP balloting once. Unlike those other guys who won MVP awards, were named to multiple All-Star games, Vaughn was under the radar, but put together a few solid seasons. And part of the reason for that is that he came to the Phillies at their peak. They made the World Series, but at that point he wasn't very good on that 1983 team. He was fine, and he didn't play in the World Series, didn't get a chance to have his moment. And then for the next few years, he's in Mike Schmidt's large shadow. And for that brief moment after Schmidt's retirement, it was Vaughn Hayes' team. And he finished that 1989 season great, but then fell off. And it was a bad team. And that takes us to that Always Sunny in Philadelphia 2010 Christmas episode. The gang is attempting to get the hottest Christmas toy.
So hold on a second. You're telling me that if Mike Schmidt were to walk in here right now and say, "Hey, get me a Redman the Robot," you'd say, "I'm sorry, we're all out. We're sold out, Mike."
Who is Mike Schmidt?
Who's Mike Schmidt? Bro, have some respect here, man. What are you talking about?
I don't know who Mike Schmidt is.
You've never heard of Mike Schmidt.
All right, easy, dude. Don't lose your cool.
12-time All-Star, 3-time baseball MVP.
Maybe he doesn't know.
I don't buy it for 1 second, dude.
Yeah, but maybe he's never
He's the all-time leading home run hitter,
No, he's
dude.
Not the all-time leading home
well,
run
for
hitter.
White guys, he
he's
is.
He's not even for white guys. Babe Ruth's got more
Next, you're going to tell me you don't know who Vaughn Hayes is or dude. Steve Bedrock Bedrosian. I don't
maybe
buy it,
Maybe he's not
bitch.
A baseball
he's
fan,
He's lying.
Man.
Go get me one.
Don't lose your cool,
he's
man.
Lying, dude. He's
Try
got
to keep
back
the Christmas spirit.
Vaughn Hayes walks in here. You got one for Vaughn Hayes?
Dude, nobody knows who Vaughn Hayes is. Man, relax.
Dude, nobody knows who Vaughn Hayes is. And that's because he's been pushed down a little bit on that pecking order of Phillies greats. But at the time, in the 80s, and among fans of the Phillies in the 80s, you had Mike Schmidt and you had Vaughn Hayes. And he was, you know, sometimes a Glenn Wilson would have a great year, but Vaughn Hayes was there and was ever-present and was solid for a few seasons. There was a band in Philly in the mid to late 2000s called Vaughn Hayes, kind of a Guided by Voices type of lo-fi band, and also a character on the NBC comedy Chuck was named Vaughn Hayes. So among a certain subset, people remember Vaughn Hayes. People know who Vaughn Hayes is. And he quietly put together a very good Phillies career. He's 19th among Phillies position players in wins above replacement, close behind Scott Rolen and Gary Maddox. But his numbers weren't that impressive. 220 homer seasons, led the league in doubles and runs scored. But he never had that push, that extra gear to push him over the top. 1989 was almost it. 26 home runs, 28 steals. If he had been 30-30 or something like that, it might be a little bit more memorable. But that was his last full season, and the Phillies were bad. Pitchers could avoid throwing to him, and he just faded away. I think he would be well appreciated now. He twice finished second in the league in walks and was a solid on-base percentage guy. After the trade, Jim Fregosi said it was very, very difficult for Hayes to play in Philadelphia. I think he put too much pressure on himself to do well. And he did have that pressure of expectations, which he met to some extent. But in the eyes of some fans, he could never live up to 5-for-1. And even when he was established, more was expected. The Phillies had big names. They knew what a superstar was supposed to be. And Vaughn Hayes never hit Mike Schmidt or Steve Carlton levels of success or longevity or superstardom. And maybe that underappreciation was because he wasn't there in 1993 with the Lenny Dykstras and the John Kruk and Darren Dalton, guys who added less career value than Vaughn Hayes, but they were big personalities on a winning team.
I can see why Phillies fans who grew up during this time might have thought a lot about Vaughn Hayes and thinking when they went to the ballpark, Vaughn Hayes is my favorite player on the team. I like this kind of player. I like the kind of player that's the second best, you know, that isn't the most popular on the team.
another reason why you and I would like Von Hayes, when you look at similarity scores on Baseball Reference, one of the top similarity scores with Von Hayes is Hackman Jeffrey Leonard. And if you look at his career stats and even just line by line, maybe 20 steals, maybe 20 home runs, going to hit 260, going to get on base, a little bit like Hackman. And that's an okay place to be.
OPS plus of 113 means he's better than replacement every single season. And some of those seasons, he was very solid and some a little less so. But a really good looking card and a great story. So thank you, David. And thank you to you at home. If all this talk of Five Guys is you thinking of bacon cheeseburger, fries and shakes, you can place your order on our Facebook page. We're facebook.com/1988 Tops Podcast. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.